Welcome to the sound of one man clapping. I am the one man coming to you direct from the bunker, returning to our regular format this week, but only because I cannot tell time. True story, I had two exceptional international guests lined up today, but alas, I have no idea how to use a clock, it seems. Watch this space. Hopefully, we'll be able to get that rescheduled, and we'll be back with awesomeness. This is a podcast about board gaming, board game culture, and growing old gracelessly. Sharing with you today all the games that were. We're going to talk about what's coming in with incoming. We'll hit crowdfunding vibes with FOMO Mofo, and then we'll chat with the voices in my head before giving someone the clap. On with the show. Well, back to our regular program. It's been a tough couple of weeks. I was sick in a way that, oh my word, working in hospitality, you come across COVID a lot. I had my number six run-in with COVID the week before last, and it was worse than the first. So if I sound a little bit froggy in the throat, that's why. I'm still sort of on the back end of recovery from that. My first run of COVID was horrifying. COVID 2, 3, 4, and 5 was fine. A day and a half of feeling meh. But I tell you, we had a strain of COVID in the house, and it knocked the fox out for about 10 days. It knocked Lou out for about 8 days. I had to take a whole week off work. I was literally paralytic with fever and just general malaise. But I'm on the mend now, back in the studio. Thank you for your patience. I'm sure you found some other great stuff to listen to in the meantime. So, this week in gaming. Well, I guess having a week of, it was really 8 days of no games. That's how sick I was, Clappers. No games. I could not muster up a game of Dropolter with the peanut. Like, it was literally bed and vitamin C and tea and sadness. But did get a couple of games in, and I'm only going to talk about two. One, because I only played three or four. Yeah, spoiler alert. Things are sunnier now. Listen, look, things are going to be really good. Got to play a game of Castle Combo. Super Trooper bought Castle Combo earlier this year and got that to the table. I got to play that with Buttercup and with the Fox and with Super Trooper. And Castle Combo is this delightful little tableau builder. And if you think it's kind of like Earth Lite, if you played Earth, you're going to play a card in tableau and all these cards are going to sort of ricochet off each other. It's a little Fantasy Flight-ish, you know, esque as well with, you know, card score for other cards. And you only get 9 cards. It's easy to teach, easy to play. The art's quite charming. And the Fox, God love her, she spent the 20 minutes going, what does this card do? How do I do this again? Oh, I'm not sure. Is this card? And then comes scoring. It's like, oh, I think this card's worth 5,000 points. God love her. You know, she just, I'm not sure if she's faking not being a gamer the whole time or if she's just genuinely that charmingly coquettish when it comes to playing games. Anyway, we got a game of that in after Super Trooper and I had a full day-night of Aeon Trespass. So it's a great way to get back in the saddle. We had a day-night of Aeon Trespass. Oh, spoiler alert, it did not go well. And we're going to touch on this a little bit more in detail in Voices in My Head. But we had a full campaign blowout fail. Aeon Trespass is not a fail-forward system. It is not a do your best and try again, guys. It's a you sucked balls and you get to go back to the very beginning and start all over again. Which, you know, to our credit as dedicated gamers, we did. And I mean, there's a saving grace on this. I'm not going to go into spoilers. I think what we'll do is when we finally finish Cycle 1, Super Trooper and I will sit down and we're going to have a full spoiler alert wrap up on Cycle 1 top to bottom with all our favorite moments because there have been a few. But you get to a point where the world ends, game's over. You haven't achieved something in a certain amount of time or a certain amount of activities. I'm not going to spoil what happened to us, but it was bad. It was bad. And so we spent a half an hour resetting the table. I reckon we were probably 12 or 13 hours away from coming to the end of cycle one. But given the way it ended, we didn't really have a chance. I don't think we ever really had a chance of getting there. So fingers crossed. We will. I'll talk about that again, you know, towards the end of the episode. But mildly devastated. But also, park that. We'll pick it up again later. We failed. We bombed out. We were about 40 hours into the campaign. And Antrespass basically just said, "No, you guys suck. So go and think about what you did and come back and try again." So that's what we're doing. And that's all the games. Oh, man. Like, it's nice to be playing games again. But I'll tell you what, when you have that, it was maybe 10, 11 days, no games at all. I got a couple of little games in with the Fox and the Peanut as I was easing back into being able to sit upright and hold a conversation without looking like Gilbert Gottfried. But I'll tell you what, I missed it. I'm so happy to be back at it. I've got another game day coming this Saturday. We've got Project L and the Cracker in the bunker again, which is going to be a great day. And yeah, that's it. I'll be traveling for work this week, so I'll be packing some small box delights and hopefully getting some of that to the table while I'm away. This week on Incoming, there is nothing. Let's not bury the lead. Let's just go straight to the bottom line. There's nothing. I don't have to deal with Postman Pete's bullshit coming up the driveway going, "Oh, this is so heavy. What are you? Some kind of drugs importer?" I don't have to deal with that this week because there's nothing. There's just only sadness. There's no game who shall not be named on my doorstep, although rumors say perchance it might be delivering this week, which is amazing because I'm not going to be home all week. So it'll arrive on Tuesday or Wednesday. I said to the Fox, "I'm expecting a box this week. It's going to weigh 22 kilos. And I just put it to one side. I'll deal with it when I get back." So nothing. No incoming. No pre-orders coming in. No, nothing being delivered. Nothing. It's Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. You get nothing. There's nothing this week. That's incoming. Stuff it. FOMO Mofo is off the chain. So, this week in FOMO Mofo, I guess I'll start with the usual disclaimer. This is not an exhaustive list of all things crowdfunding. If I did that this week, we would be recording till basically the sun comes up tomorrow, and I'd have to pull an all-nighter, and then I would be in an absolutely tragic place for my first day at a new job tomorrow. That's right, I start a new job tomorrow. I got rid of the old one. I've got a new challenge coming. First day of work. I don't have the time to do an all-nighter just to cover every single campaign that's live right now, because there are literally dozens of campaigns right now. But this is merely a snapshot of the games I like, the games that have caught my eye, the games that I think are noteworthy for my personal tastes, or games that have lots of toys, and sometimes all of the above. I'm going to kick off first with one that I think I'd really like to play. And it looks great, and it gets a lot of good press. And that's Fate Forge Chronicles of Khan. And that's coming out with a reprint with an expansion. I think that's on Kickstarter from memory. And I'm not going to lie, this looks really great. I guess the minis look fine. I want to say fine, they look fine. They don't look amazing. They don't look terrible. They look fine. The art, it's also fine. You know, I think I look at the art that's on Fate Forge Chronicles of Khan, and I think it probably really appeals to some people. I find it a bit generic. That's just me. That's just my personal take on it. It's innocuous enough. It's not offensive. We don't, to the best of my knowledge, have barbarian women fighters in G-strings and bikinis, which is always nice to see as the dad of three girls. The characters seem very generic. You know, you've got the shaman and the mercenary and that sort of like, which I guess it has its own benefits. I personally like a little bit of flavor and a bit of flair, but I guess if you're playing Fate Forge, I don't have to remember that my character is Plumbus the Younger Knight or Farwonkle the Uber Source Monkey. I don't know. Like, some of it gets really wild. You know, some of it gets really wild. I have to admit, I'm 30% of the way through Agamonia. I can't remember the four characters' names that I'm playing. I can't. But when I'm playing at the time, I do call them by name. I don't know if it's like, if I'd be playing Fate Forge, you go, "All right, it's time for the shaman to act." It's not a gripe. It's just, I like stuff that's got a little bit more personality. Apparently, it plays really well solo. You know, I've looked at some playthroughs. I've looked at some of the stuff that's out there. It plays, I believe you've got to play two characters. You've got to play two-handed, which I have no issue with whatsoever. But you've got to, it's not like ATO, for example. If you want to play on Trespass solo, you have to play four-handed, which I think is not just doable, but I don't think it would be pleasant, or not as pleasant as some of the other games, for sure. Agamonia, I play four-handed. It's fantastic four-handed. Fate Forge, I believe you have to play two-handed. I don't think there's true solo. And apparently it plays really well. The decision space is just right. This is a huge package. There's a lot going on in this. The all-in deluxe is $271 Australian. It's $42 shipping, which sounds like a lot, I guess, but it's not. It's only 16%. It's 16% of the price of the game. And really, if you're getting anything less than sort of 18-20% price of the game for shipping, I think you're doing pretty well in 2025. I guess my personal issue, and it's not an issue, but my personal issue with this is, if I wanted, I can get it tomorrow on Amazon for $145 with free shipping, right? Now, the online campaign, the Kickstarter campaign, obviously comes with all kinds of quality of life issues. It's got deluxe items and metal bits and plastic bits and wooden bits and dual layer bits and whatever else. And you know, I love that stuff. I also am not incredibly good at delayed gratification if I don't have to go through that. Now, I pledge for a lot of games. I've got a very large catalog of stuff that I'm waiting on, going all the way out to the end of 2026 at this point. And, you know, I'm okay with that. If I could get that game off the shelf, I would. So, for example, Agamonia was a crowdfunding campaign. They recently had a reprint, and they were very clear in the reprint. They said, look, we don't have any changes in this game. We don't have any errata that we've discovered. We don't have anything different. There are no changes for this game. So don't feel like if you've played the first one or you own the first one, that you have to upgrade. And just as the game was going into its reprint status on Kickstarter, my good friends at Gameology in Melbourne had a copy on sale from the previous campaign. And to be honest, the price from the previous campaign was, I think, the exact same as getting it on Kickstarter. And that's probably because the price differential between the first print and the second print was much higher. So, for example, it might have been $110 in the first printing, and it's going to be $230 in the second printing. Whatever. I have no facts in front of me. I'm just plucking these numbers out of the air, guys. And whatever the price was for the Kickstarter, the second printing, that's what I could get it for from Gameology at Melbourne. And so I did. Because if I don't have to wait a year and a half for something, I'm not going to. So I think for me, Fate Forge Chronicles looks great. It's got a great write-ups, great reviews. People really like it. As far as campaigns go, you know, there's a lot of people that talk about I won't use the word influencers, but a lot of content creators that talk about Fate Forge particularly feeling quite fresh and different if you're suffering campaign fatigue, which I know we can, and, you know, voices in my head this week, we're going to be talking about campaigns in particular. But there it is. For me, you know, the other thing that's, I guess, I'm not jumping at the Kickstarter campaign on this one is, I'm getting kind of tired of setting up a scenario for 25 minutes, you know, a la Jaws of the Lion, you know, with boards and doors and tokens or whatever the case is. And that's what this is. And that's no disservice to Fateforge Chronicles, because I know there's a certain joy and a certain zen in setting up a scenario. I certainly really enjoy setting up things like Voidfall. It takes me 40 minutes to set up a game of Voidfall before everyone walks in the door. And I really like it. I love the precision of laying it all out and that sort of thing. But when it comes to, you know, I tried playing Jaws the Lion solo after Lou tapped out, and I tried starting Gloomhaven solo after Lou tapped out, and I just found the juice wasn't worth the squeeze for me, and all the work and if it is for you, then that's great. I'm not trying to yuck someone else's yum. It's just for me, you know, when I look at something like Agamonia now, which has the Jaws of the Lion 2.0 version, where it's a great big spiral bound book, and I do mean a great big one. It's like an A3 spiral bound book. You open it up and it's got the rules for the scenario on one side and the scenario on the other, and they do have some monstrous scenarios, which they've included huge, basically cards. It's not as heavy to call it a board, because it's only one scenario, but it's a nice thick card you lay on the table and you plunk it down, and that's the scenario ready to go. I really love that, because it means I can go, right, I want to play Agamonia. I can actually go from no Agamonia to ready to play Agamonia in about 15 minutes. So Fateforge seems to be doing quite well. I think there's, you know, there's an increasing difficulty in doing campaign games because of the aforementioned campaign fatigue. I think a lot of people have just tapped out. They've done Gloomhaven, they've done Frosthaven, or half of Frosthaven, or a third of Frosthaven, or they've finished it all. They've moved through Oathsworn, you know, Isis Vanguard, Tainted Grail 1 and 2, all of these sorts of things. And there is kind of a little bit of a fatigue out there. And I think it's going to get harder and harder for board game designers to do this sort of stuff. Again, we'll touch on that a little bit later on, but there it is. So that's Fateforge Chronicles of Khan. Back it, don't back it. I actually, look, I may still, because I like the quality of life stuff. I know I say I have trouble waiting for things. This is meant to fulfill in November of this year, and by then I would think I'm going to be well done Agamonia. I'm going to be well done, if not nearly done, with Earthborn Rangers, because that's not a massive campaign. We'll see. I do love the quality of life stuff. You know, I do love minis. I do love metal stuff and plastic stuff. So look, it's not a no. It's a probably not, but I think there's 8 or 9 days left in the campaign, and who knows with me, right? I'm as flighty as a three-winged fucking owl. And going on from there, it is a pew-pew space fest right now. You pick your flavor of space, and oh my god, you're spoiled for choice. There are like 6 space campaigns out there right now. You pick your flavor. I have looked into these just only on the surface, and so I'm going to blast through some of the ones that are out there. I'm not going to go into these ones in detail. These were on my radar. They popped up. They've launched. I've had a quick look at them, decided for one reason or another they're not for me, but I'm certainly happy I had a look at them. We've got Star Driven Gateway. They're calling this a Starship Simulator. It looks a little bit 3X maybe, you know, you're exploring, there's pick up and deliver, there's dice, there's ships. You've got Dark Harperian Battle Stations. This is a passion project by Paul Willis, who, big shout out to Paul, he reached out to me for some feedback. It seems like a really passionate dude about his game, and unfortunately, just at the time he reached out, he said, look, you seem like a gamer who knows a thing or two about games, I'd love to get your feedback on my game. I fell incredibly ill. His game's got a very distinct flair to it. There's certainly a unique art sense to it. It's kind of that brush of hyper-realism and realism kind of merged in together. He's using photographs merged with hyper-realism art. It certainly has an interesting look. I know he's got some amazing rights to use some famous sci-fi actors. I'm not going to name names because I'm going to get them wrong, but I'm certainly glad I had a look at it. Again, it's not one that's for me. But Terminus Frontier, there's another one. It's co-op, Space Raiders. It looks a lot more like a tabletop mini game than a board game. They're selling it as a board game, but when you look at the actual gameplay and the rules, it, you know, there's terrain and there's all kinds of stuff, and it looks like a tabletop mini game maybe, but lighter. Cities of Venus Survivors. You're piloting a mech, and I'm just going to insert, and this is no disservice to Cities of Venus, but I'm just going to insert blah, blah, blah after this one. There is so much sci-fi stuff out there. And unfortunately, because they're all launching simultaneously and they all have, I'm not going to say they all look the same, but they all kind of look like they fit into that same mid-tier niche. These are indie developers trying to get their sci-fi dream off the ground. They're all funding at various levels. We're not talking about Simon or Awakened Realm $1 million campaigns. I don't think we're even talking about, you know, $300,000 or $400,000 campaigns. And that's, these campaigns may be, in the eyes of their designers, wildly successful at the place they're in. But I think these are 4 campaigns that are probably going to suffer the pinch of all having launched simultaneously, all having a kind of vibe, you know, of a look and feel where they kind of, you could kind of put them all in the corner. And if I said to you, tell me which one's City of Venus, you might be able to do it if you've spent some time with it, because they have different looks about them. But I think they're going to suffer from that, unfortunately. And I'm sure there are stark differences. I'm sure there are. These were all in my bookmarked ones to follow when they launched. I've looked through them all. I'm glad I did. I don't have the motivation to sit and unpick them in detail to really find out if any of them are for me, because just on the first pass, I've gone, well, that's really not my thing. But they're out there. If you like pew pew space fests, as I said, pick your flavor. You're spoiled for choice. Oh man, I wanted. Okay, so let's talk about the next one after this. Star Trek Ascendancy. Oh my sweet baby Jesus. Okay, so I am a mad Star Trek fan. I can name everyone from Voyager and Deep Space Nine and Generations and the original. I can even talk to you about Scott Bakula in Enterprise. I can talk about Discovery. I haven't watched the one that came after Discovery, Strange New Worlds, I think. I haven't watched Lower Decks. I'm just got a little bit of Star Trek fatigue the last couple of years. Oh, Picard. Picard, the reboot. Glorious. I love Star Trek. Star Trek Ascendancy. Shit a brick. Oh, my God. Now, let me say, I love Star Trek. Like, love Star Trek. I'm one of those that love Star Trek and Star Wars. If you said, well, you can only have one, I'm like, go fuck yourself. Pardon my French. It's a French sort of episode today. We're going deep into the French Alps. This is basically a meaty 4X. It's like Star Trek meets Twilight Imperium. Okay? And I'm gonna be honest. It looks great. Right? This is not a new game. This is a reprint. They've got three new factions. They've got, I think that puts them at 12 or 16 factions. They've got every expansion they've ever released, which is not one or two. It's a lot. It plays 12. Okay, let that sink in. A 12-player 4X game. I'm not being funny. I'd rather die. Can you imagine a 12-player 4X game? You could take your turn. You could fuck off down the street. You could go to the shops. You could get yourself a kebab. You could meet up with three friends for a beer and come back, and it might still not be your bloody turn. Like, oh my Lord. I cannot think of anything worse than a 12-player 4X game. Now, those of you that are Ascendancy fans, send me a note. If you go, no, Hemmes, you're a lunatic. 12-player Ascendancy is amazing. Downtime's irrelevant and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay. Hey, I can't think of anything worse. I really can't. It does have a really interesting mode that's 2v2, right? So you've got all these millions of factions and you've got 2v2 that can play, and it looks really interesting. It's got what looks like a really spectacular solo mode. Or you can play 1v1v1v1, which, you know, again, I haven't played Ascendancy. I've watched a few videos because Star Trek interests me and because it's the kind of thing that I really wanted to learn about, whether it was for me or not. I did watch quite a few videos, new and old, about the gameplay. And there's a lot of sort of consensus that 1v1v1 for example, is not nearly as good a game as 2v2, just because you can get eliminated from the game, or, you know, you can get bumped out early, Twilight Imperium-esque, and then you're sitting around for 4 hours watching everyone else play. It comes in, if you get everything, comes in two Kallax cell-filling Borg cubes. Okay, so again, as a fan of Star Trek stuff, let me tell you, it looks so good. You've got one Borg cube that has all the gameplay stuff, all the bits, all the plastic, all the dice, all the tokens, all the blah, blah, blah. And then the other Borg cube opens up and it's got all the factions in these little cassettes that kind of all slip in there. It looks great. And then you get to the price. Are y'all sitting down? You may have looked this up, but are y'all really sitting down? Like, are you sitting down and you have no chance of falling off your chair? Okay, you can't accidentally punch someone when your arms fly out. You want it all. You want the deluxe. You want it all. And of course, if you're going to buy a game like this and you're going to buy it now, you want it all, don't you? You don't want part of a game. You don't want four factions or three factions or five factions. It's like, I'm going to buy this game. It's two board cubes. Just hit me. $750 Australian. Okay, $750 Australian. Now, in its defense, it's a very sedate $75 shipping. It's only 10% shipping. $75 shipping. Whew. Okay, so if you're an Ascendancy fan, I get it. You're like, hey, this is my grail game. I play this all the time. We play this every weekend. We play it every 10 days. We get together 26 times a year and we play Ascendancy. Hey, man, that makes perfect sense then. And I'm not going to lie, I've spent this much on a game more than once at this point. Both Aeon Trespass and Enormity, both Into the Unknown properties, I have spent this much on a game, but those two games each are going to give me hundreds and hundreds of hours. Now, Star Trek Ascendancy, if you are like, I went to a Twilight Imperium 4-day by basically a club that plays TI4, and they were inviting people to come. You bought a ticket, you go, they teach you how to play TI4. I had a great time. I really had a great time. But oh my word, this is like a cult. Like, these guys, some of these guys, they're like, yeah, I've played TI4. I've got 700 recorded plays of TI4. I'm like, what? Yeah, no, that's all I play. Every weekend, I play two games of TI4, Saturday and Sunday. And I've been doing that for 9 years. I'm like, what? You what? Yep. So they're not board gamers. Because when I started talking to them, I said, what other games do you play? And they're like, what are you talking about? We don't play other games. We play TI4. I'm like, okay, man. Like, don't get me wrong, I had a great time. They're great guys. there were a lot of us there. It was like 60 of us there for the day or whatever the case is. And they, you know, every table of six or eight had at least one expert on there that was basically like a game master helping us through it, helping everyone through it, because it's a long day. TI4 is like, on a short game of Twilight Imperium 4 is like 6.5-7 hours. I had a great time. I don't feel like I ever need to play again. I would play again, but I certainly would not go and buy Twilight Imperium 4. You know, and TI4 is the kind of game that if you're at a table and you've got newbies and experienced players, the newbies don't have a chance. Like, no chance at all. So if you're going to play, you play with newbies. Now, maybe there's this same cluster of Star Trek Ascendancy fans out there. And if you are, I take my hat off to you guys. Because if that's your jam and that's what you do, then this looks like a fantastic package. And if it was for me, if I was playing one game over and over and over till the day I die, then, you know, I'd want the Uber set. Even with stretch pay. Stretch pay is like 5 monthly payments of $140 or something. You know, that's a manageable payment structure. But in the end, I've dropped $750 for a game that maybe I'll play once a year. You know, maybe it would be my best solo game ever. Maybe, and I'll end up playing it 50 times. But even then, it's not for me. It looks amazing. It looks amazing. And if you're a Star Trek fan, or you're an Ascendancy fan, or you're a 4X fan, and you don't have to get the all-in. You know, you can get the base, 6 factions, whatever the case is, seems very reasonable. There's a million tiers you can get into. I like to buy the whole game or nothing because, you know, I have this weird compulsion to, you know, if I'm going to buy a game, well, I better have all the game, because if I don't have all the game, I don't have any of the game, and if I don't have all the upgrades, it's unplayable. So for me, you know, you can label that with whatever you want. Star Trek Ascendancy, oh my god. After that, something a little tamer, a little smaller, Fame and Fable. Like, Fame and Fable's been, I've been watching this one, waiting for it to come to crowdfunding. I bookmarked it, I want to say 2 months ago. It's got a really interesting aesthetic, and now that I've looked into it, I can understand why, because Fame and Fable is this cutesy little 1 to 4 player. It's a fantasy fighting-esque game. When I say fighting-esque, it's you're kind of fighting with people around the table, but it's not an area control. It's more of a backstabbing, push your luck kind of fighty game. And the game designer is a graphics design artist. So he's a graphics design artist turned game designer. I don't know that he's made an amazing game. I've looked at it. The art is highly stylized. It looks like something off like a medieval tarot deck or something, you know, or something maybe, you know, Homer Simpson saw after eating the world's hottest chili. You know, it's candle drinking art for sure. But it certainly has an aesthetic that is unique. You know, there's not much out there that you will ever see that has the same kind or style or theme of art as this. So certainly I haven't seen anything like it. And it's worth checking out. This is an indie project, right? This is the reason for crowdfunding. It's projects like this that crowdfunding, you know, really came to light for. The little deluxe, I'm going to say it's a little concerning. It's not, but it is, and I'll explain myself. The deluxe version, which has all the wooden bits and all the upgrades and dual layer, blah, 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 is less than $100. Now, that also comes with $40 in shipping attached. So it's a 40% shipping differential. And that's probably because he's not opted to build some of the shipping into the game. If he'd said the game was $120 and the shipping was $25, he'd be getting more money out of people, and it would sound a little more in line with other crowdfunding projects out there. A deluxe boutique indie board game for less than $100 in crowdfunding is really hard to come by. And when you're not going to get crowdfunded to the tune of $700,000, it means your economies of scale disappear, you know, and I can't remember the number, but it's going to fund, but it's not funding to the tune of 10,000 copies, or I don't think even 1,000 copies, maybe. And I've got that wrong, my apologies. So my concern is, you've got a first-time designer, or very early in his career game designer. It would be a horrible thing for his game not to actually get to the finish line, because it looks interesting. I can't imagine it's going to get a retail run. So if you like the way it looks, guys, I would say get it. I like the look. I don't like it 40% shipping-like. And to be honest, the art is not really for me. I can see it really appealing to people. It's not for me. You know, I love good art in a game, and good art for me can be anything. You know, I'm a Maddie and O'Toole fan, but also I love Annie Stegg's art. I love Beth Sobel's art. I love, Kyle Farren's art. I'm not in one sort of boutique art set. I do love good art in a game, and I'm not saying this is bad art by any stretch of the imagination. It's just not for me. And as much as, art doesn't make the game, you spend the time when you're playing the game staring at the art. And so for me, it's a no, but I did have a very good look at it. And I said it was a big one. We got a couple more to go. Coral Castle is live. Now, Coral Castle, as the dad of three daughters, I've spent more than my fair share with mermaids. Okay, so I have watched more episodes of H2O, which is this super dodge mermaid soap opera filmed on the Gold Coast up here. If you've not watched H2O, go watch H2O. Watch one episode so you can say you can. Daughters love H2O. It's great. Not H2O. Well, it's fine. Coral Castle, anyway, back to it. This was on my radar because my youngest is 9. She still loves mermaids. She loves that kind of stuff. And, the box cover looks fantastic. And for the last 6 weeks, that's all you've been able to see is the box cover, that it's Coral Castle, that it's a mermaid sort of thing. It's gone live. And to be honest, I'm not a huge fan of the game components inside. I think the game components look fairly unpolished. Now, that may not matter to you, and I'm not talking about the game components being cheap. I've got Underwater Cities, which is a game by Vladimir Suchy. It's on my shelf for first, and the card stock on it is really nasty. And the game boards, the player boards that came with it, they're nasty. Like, they're really thin cards, like thinner even, I think, than the Ark Nova Zoom apps. And I kind of look at that and I go, really? Like, that's the best you could offer us for the price? And look, I don't publish and distribute games, so whatever. I would have happily paid an extra $25-$30 for better components there. And I'm not saying these components are bad components. That's not it. But they look quite unpolished in that, the player boards and the main board, there's a lot of dead space in them. There's a lot of really open, wide open bits. And there's nothing, I haven't played the game, so maybe there's a purpose for it. As much as I want to support small games and I'd love to put a mermaid game in front of my daughter, and I've looked at the gameplay, I don't think this one's for me. I have been watching it for a while, being very hopeful. It's not that expensive. The deluxe edition, which comes with little clam shells to hold all your tokens and little pearls and little wooden bits and whatever the case, it's less than $100. That's about 30% shipping, I think, at $30. This is the second crowdfunding game by, I think this particular designer's name is Travis Deer. His first one was a very small campaign. Again, this is another small indie project. So if you're looking to support small indie projects, have a look at Coral Castle. It may or may not be for you. But, as I've said a couple of times, in our relationship together, I do like to get these little indie projects occasionally. I've got a few of them in the bunker if I look around. Not a ton. I do have a few. And this one isn't for me. I find the art on the cards doesn't stand up to the art on the box cover. If you look at the box cover, the box cover is like, whoa, that is a really beautiful, flourished, detailed mermaid box cover. And then the cards, I'm not saying they're rushed, I just don't think they're done in the same caliber. And so for me, it's going to be a no for me, but it's worth a look. And the last one, oh man. Okay, the last one is Catan All the Plastic. Now, we've known this has been coming for a while. They announced it was coming a while back. Now, I have never played Catan. I actually own Catan. I bought it years and years ago because Lou played Catan at a friend's house. She said, oh, Catan's great. Can we get a copy of Catan? I went, sure. I got a copy of Catan. It is like straight up OG Catan. It is still in shrink. I think I've had it 8 years, 6 or 8 years. I've never played. Now, Catan has a biblical following, right? Like, Catan has 942 expansions. If you go into a board game store, like, it's not quite as many Catans as there are Monopolies, but oh man, it's a lot. And I can't even tell you the difference. I know there's pirates and seafarers and traders and blah 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 blah. So you want to go have a look at crowdfunding, go look at Catan. It's not called Catan All the Plastic, it's called Catan, I don't know, World of Upgrades. I don't even know what it's called. Just go search Catan. But, again, make sure you're seated. And this campaign, to the best of my knowledge, has zero gameplay. This is not new expansions. This is not get everything Catan. This is not buy a package. This is not There's no new cards. There's not, I don't even know if there are cards in Catan. Sorry, there's not. It's not. There's no new gameplay to the best of my knowledge. This is just freely stuff to help you play Catan, right? Cosmetic upgrades. Now, if you want everything, if you want everything in this crowdfunding campaign for your Catan, because let's say you have everything Catan. Now, let me be clear. If you have everything Catan, this is for you, right? You haven't even got Catan if you haven't got this package, right? If you have everything Catan and you don't buy this package, you don't even really own Catan anymore, right? But if you want everything, it's $1,600 Australian. And then on top of that, because guaranteed this is going to be 50 kilos of plastic, it's $225 in shipping. Now that's to Australia, right? So if you want everything, it's $1,825 for cosmetic upgrades. Jesus Christ on a motorbike. Oh my God. I love a quality of life upgrade. But I can tell you what, not in a million years would I spend $2,000 on cosmetics. Now, I'll say it again. I'm right here to yuck your yum. If you own every box of Catan, I absolutely expect that you are mad for Catan. You play it all the time, and this is for you, right? I own the Uber Deluxe Castles of Burgundy. I didn't need it. Castles of Burgundy, it doesn't play any different, right? But you've got those chunky bits, the tiles, and whatever the case is. I own that. I love it. I love everything about it. It's probably taken a $75 game and turned it into a $300 game. I own that, right? And if you own everything Catan, you've probably spent $2,000 on Catan. I'm guessing. I don't know. So what's another two to make it Uber Catan? Whoa, it's got terrain, dice, buildings, metal bits, plastic bits, resin bits, player pieces, frames, ships, pins, ports, storage. Holy mother of God. If you like Catan, this is for you. Get on it. Yeah. I think this is on GameFound, so if you're lucky, it's, you know, stretch pay, it's 10 payments of $200. I don't know. But anyway, Catan all the plastic. That's FOMOMO for this week, guys. It is a huge one, and as I said, I've only covered maybe 25% of what's out there. Drop us a line on Facebook or send me a chat if you're following other campaigns you think are noteworthy that I've missed. I'd love to hear about it. This week on Voices in My Head, we're hitting the campaign trail. I want to talk about different campaigns. And you know, this is off the back of Super Trooper and I having to hit a hard reboot on our And Trespass campaign. We were maybe, I want to say we were about 40 hours in, you know, and we stripped it down and reset it. And when you reset, you get a very small head start. You get an extra technology that you wouldn't have gotten until about 20 hours into the game, which can kind of accelerate your first bit. I think there was a small handful of gear that we could get our hands on that kind of gave us a little bit of a leg up, but not a lot. And looking at the reset rules, you know, if you fail multiple times, that head start is augmented three or four times. I think there's four different stages of resetting. These are no spoilers because, you know, no one but us is going to ever fail the game, right? And some elements, I won't spoil which ones, but there are some elements that persist from a game to another, but most don't. I think the elements that they've chosen to persist from one game to another are the right ones because it actually gives you a little bit of a reward for going back and having to play a second time because those elements that persist are going to let you see parts of the game that you wouldn't have the first time through. So I'm appreciative of that. But I guess I want to talk about three different styles of campaign games. And I'm not talking about space crawlers or dungeon crawlers or roguelites and that sort of stuff. I'm talking about straight up campaigns, like straight up. So you've got the Aeon Trespass style where if you fail the campaign, and believe me, I think there are four ways to fail the campaign in Aeon Trespass. If you run out of days, if all your Argonauts die, oh, there's plenty. If you run out of hull or crew, if your Argo fate hits 9, if you run out of Titans, or if you get to the end of the Doom storyline. So that's 7 ways, and that's 7 ways you can literally fail the campaign. And we came close a couple of times to having our ship obliterated. We got down to, I think, a small handful of Titans before we stumbled onto a cache of Titans. But seven different ways that if any one of those initiates, it's the asteroid hitting Earth. It's the end of days. And that happened to us. And so you've got the type of campaigns which are hard fail. And I can't even name another one. I haven't played another campaign that's hard fail, right? I've played several. You know, you've got the next type where you've got the Gloomhaven, Frosthaven type campaigns where if you fail a scenario, you basically have to go back and do that scenario again. And there's not really any penalties for that. Not that I can think of. There's no penalties. In fact, I think you could even keep your loot in Gloomhaven and Frosthaven if you fail a scenario. It's just the patience of having to go back, reset that scenario, and do it again. I remember one day, I think we played this one scenario four times, in no small part because Coop had actually set us up as a four-player contingent, and there were only three of us. So we were actually fighting a much harder scenario than we meant to. And I know we did it three times. We might have played it four times. And that was almost rage quit territory. So you've got the kind where if you fail, you just reset, you do it again. And then you've got the fail forward scenario type. So for example, in Agamonia, if you get to the end of a scenario and you fail on the objectives, you still move down the branching paths. You miss out on stuff. You miss out on specific rewards. You don't miss out on anything that stops your campaign from progressing, but you might miss out on, you know, some great loot. You might miss out on finishing off a storyline for an NPC. And then if you pass, if you achieve it, then you move forward with full huzzah. And I quite like all three of these types of campaigns. So I guess talking about Aeon Trespass, you know, this hard fail, which really, it looms over you from the very beginning. You know, you start this game and you know there are seven ways to totally lose the game. And that's, it kind of feels like walking a tightrope without a net underneath. Because while you want to make decisions that advance your game and are cool and interesting, you're constantly balancing that with, well, how close are we to complete annihilation? And sometimes you've got to make a decision that is about self-preservation rather than what you want to really do in the game. And that's powerful. You know, I know there's some, and this is all spoiler-free, but there's some choices that Super Trooper and I have had to make where we're like, well, we'd really like to do that, but that's going to cost us one of our hull on the ship, or it's going to cost us the Argo Fate. And if your Argo Fate hits a certain amount, you're done. And so we've had to make decisions basically based on self-preservation rather than what we really want to do in the game. And that's a hard decision to make because you know you're walking away potentially from something interesting, something helpful, something cool, but you're having to make these decisions basically so that you can, and you know, and in the end we obviously didn't succeed. But then you've also got the Gloomhaven, Frosthaven scenario where, you know, you're in a scenario, you set it up, you work through the scenario, and you fail the scenario. And basically, you basically just rewind time and you do it again. You start all over and you do that scenario all over again. And it doesn't penalize you for that, right? Unless it's been a while, I must admit, it's been probably about 4 or 5 months since I played Frosthaven. But from memory, there's no penalty for redoing a scenario. You just go back and you do it again. Other than it's taking you 2 hours and you've got to spend another 2 hours going through the scenario. I think that while I understand the reasoning, because the success in the scenario is directly tied to the story development in the way it's written for Gloomhaven and Frosthaven, as an example. I think that is my least favorite of the three. Not because I don't want to do a scenario again, but because certainly, I think Gloomhaven from memory was 75 scenarios. I didn't play them. I only played three. So, but I think it was 75. But I think Frosthaven at its fullest is over 100 scenarios. And if you've got to play some of those twice, or in some cases even three times, that's a lot of scenarios. And I'm not saying they're worth it. I'm not saying they're not worth it. But in my experience of playing Gloomhaven, Frosthaven, Jaws of the Lion, the scenarios themselves, while interesting, are a bit Euro-esque in that they're not directly tied to the plot. And by that I mean, like, you've been chasing pirates down a corridor with the cases, and you come to the docks and you've got to fight the pirates to get the piece of the puzzle. I mean, that makes sense. I get it. But it could be anything, is what I'm saying. It could be, and I guess I could say that of any game, but the scenarios, sometimes they feel a bit like you're playing The Crew. If you haven't played The Crew, it's another campaign game. It's a trick-taking card game where it's like, well, now you're at the bottom of the ocean, and so you've got to isolate all the twos in your tricks. Like, well, let's do that. Oh, we've got off the bottom of the ocean and our ship's repaired. Now we go to the next trick. And that's a little unfair in some ways, because I know every scenario in Gloomhaven and Frosthaven has a paint over it, has a skin over it that matches where you are and what you're doing. And there's an overarching story. But when you layer that over something like Agamonia, for example. Now, Agamonia, I think, is probably my favorite campaign game of the last 5 years, for simply the reason of how the game itself is emergent. So, and I know I've talked about this, so I'm not going to belabor it, because those of you that are regular listeners, you're like, yeah, where's the fast forward button? So what that means is you set up a scenario and you've got this card or half a book or whatever the case is on the table, and there are a number of spots that are labeled, usually with a letter reference, and you've got a deck of cards sitting next to you, and you don't know what's at that spot until you approach it. So it might say range 2 on that spot, so when you get within 2 range of that spot, you pull the card that matches the letter and you read the text on the front. And it might say there's a steaming bag of what appears to be manure, but it's glowing green and could have something really cool inside, but the stench is amazing, and if you get too close, you could get really sick. So you know that's what's there. And then if you get to that actual spot, you can flip the card over, rummage around what's in the bag. You may have gone, well, it's a bag of poo, so I'm going to take my dude who's immune to poisons just in case. And the bag explodes with a poison trap, or there's, it's a poo-poo trap, whatever the case is. But inside is a glowing huzzah bracelet, whatever. It is a superbly interesting mechanic in that, when you start a scenario, you have no idea what's out there. Okay, and the spawns are driven by a different deck of cards. So when you set up for, say, a Frosthaven, you've got the book in front of you, you can see all the spawn points, you can see every creature, even if it's a room that has a closed door, because when you're playing Gloomhaven or Frosthaven, if a door is shut, you don't set up the room that's behind it. You kind of have a glimmer of what's behind it, because the book is there when you're setting up, and you're like, oh, that looks gnarly. So you'll know anytime there's a closed door in Gloomhaven or Frosthaven that it's shit behind the door anyway, right? You know when you open that door, it's a shit show no matter what. And I mean shit show in the best possible way. But you know it's there. In Agamonia, you've got this delightfully emergent piece, which I think, if you hop over to something like Tainted Grail as well, Tainted Grail is more in that vein as well. Tainted Grail is I guess you'd call it a tile exploration. They're cards, they're tarot-sized cards, and each tarot-sized card represents a space that you can move onto and interact with, but you don't know what's on that card until you literally step onto it, right? So you don't have any idea. There's, it's sitting there face down. You can get a glimpse of what's on it if you've got these way shrines that open up everything around the area, everything within one hex or one card around them. But again, you have that emergent scenario. And Tainted Grail was also a fail forward, right? If you failed a scenario, you failed the scenario and you moved on and you tackled another scenario. So what are the pros and cons, I guess? I guess, pros and cons of the Gloomhaven, Jaws of the Lion, Frosthaven is... You don't miss out on anything, right? You're not going to miss out on anything. I mean, you might miss out on a chest because you can't get to it in a scenario. There's a treasure chest over there and there's a unique piece of loot over there. And because it's got 17 Spargle demons around it, you don't get to it. So you miss out on that. But in something like a Frosthaven Gloomhaven, while there's branching storyline, you have the opportunity, by and large, to see every branch. Right, so if you're a completionist or you really want to make sure you don't miss out on anything, it's a great system because you're going to go down that rabbit hole and you know that you can take your time and you can unpick literally everything. Something like Agamonia, and even Tainted Grail, we can lump them two together because they're very... Them two? God, where's your English hammers? We lump them two together Because of that emergent sort of gameplay, you can actually, I'll use the term, accidentally finish a scenario and not have explored a whole region in that area. Now, the wonderful thing about something like Tate of Grail is you can actually go back to any region you want. There are timers in the game which have negative consequences if they go too long. But you can actually go, well, you know what? I may have finished this scenario, but I'm going to march over there and see what the hell's in that area because I want to see it. And you can. You can go over, you can explore to your heart's content. It's quite sandboxy in that regard. Agamonia, there's no going back. You finish your scenario, and if you fail it, you fail it. You're going forward. You're going down that branch in one direction. If you pass it, you're going down a branch in another. For completionists, that's tough. But at the same time, it gives you the opportunity to do replays. Now, I've mentioned before, I chose, there are six characters with Agamonia. I know the new reprint came with, I think, two extra characters, which gives you eight. Part of me wishes that I had played with only three characters so that I could play another playthrough with the other three and perhaps see a little more of the emergent storyline, whatever the case is. And similarly with something like Tate of Grail, I played with two characters, two of the four characters, and I will 100% play it again when Super Troopers finished with it, with the other two characters, because the storyline and the gameplay and the scenarios that you encounter and your opportunities and your options for passing scenarios is wildly different depending on which character you have, right? So Tate of Grail doesn't have a hard fail. It doesn't have a you fail that scenario, so you're toast kind of thing. But what it does present is huge opportunities. So you may be doing the same scenarios on your next playthrough, but with completely different outcomes. And when I say different outcomes, I know for a fact, like, you know, when I finished a scenario and I finished it with Elgin the Candlemaker, the choice was if you have Elgin the Candlemaker, you're going down this branch. And if you had, I can't remember the other characters, but I remember Elgin. He was instrumental in my success. You go down this other branch, and the branching storylines are superb. So I know, beyond the shadow of a doubt, that I've probably only seen 30% of Tate of Grail. And so that, while Tate of Grail has a fail forward, it has a fail forward that leaves you with huge opportunity and huge incentive and huge desire to replay. So where does that leave us with Aeon Trespass, which is hard fail? And I got to say, I've never played a hard fail game before. And I'm not, I wasn't gutted. I wasn't completely emotionally eviscerated to have hard failed on Saturday. I was disappointed. And when I say disappointed, I think I was disappointed thinking, oh, we're so close to seeing maybe cycle two. And then we reset and we started again. And we reset and we started again and we realized that a certain part of the game, one of the exploration bits you can do is persistent. And I thought, well, that's a clever bit there. Because now all these things that we started to explore and started to do, which we had moved on from, because even through cycle one, you have to move on from some of these things as the timer goes through, we have a chance to go back and finish. And there's a charm and an excitement in that that I wasn't anticipating as we were packing all of our forlorn dead heroes into the box to reset the card decks and reset everything from scratch. Coupled with the fact that there are so many branches in Aeon Trespass. There's so many times we got to a point in the narrative and it said, if you have this card or if you have this icon or if you have this achievement, then you're going to do this. And when I say so many times, 80% of the choices we got to had one of these things presented where if you have A, then go to this. And if you have B, and we might have had B or C or D, or we might have had none of them. If you have none of them, then you're going to do this other thing. What that says to me is, yes, the game is hard fail. And certainly as you're resetting, it's got four boxes to tick every time you fail, which escalates the bonuses you get when you restart. They have written enough into the hard fail. And when I say written enough, I'm not talking about the extra set of knives you get or the extra technology. I'm talking about there is so much narrative. There's so much game. This game has so much put into it. And to date, I don't think we've had a single moment where we've encountered a game or a moment where the game contradicts itself, where it's left us painted into a corner, or which is a triumph of game design. But not only that, we've started again And I have to say, we sat at the table and we started again with the same zeal, if not more, than when we played the first time. And I'll explain. Because we've done 40 hours of Aeon Trespass. Now, it seems like you might go, 40 hours? 40 hours to just flush it to the toilet? That's a lot. I'm like, yeah, it is. But also, we are so much better armed for what's coming. Whether it's the same again, or, you know, obviously we're going to have the same battles. It's the same primordials. We're going to have the same style and the same escalations of battles. But we are so better armed for those battles, to come out of those battles, each one, in an exponentially better place than the one before. I mean, I remember our first battle. We set it up, and we set our first battle up, the very, very first one. You come out of the tutorial, and you set up your first battle, and we got absolutely rinsed by the game. Like, we got rinsed, and we're staring at the game going, what the fuck? Like, is this what we're up for? We're up for 500 hours of this? And, well, I don't know. What is it, Super Trooper? You're not here 35 primordial battles later. We've got a very different mentality. And so it's almost as though, because we reset, I want to say we reset, it was about lunchtime when we realized, oh God, we're dead. And we reset, and I think we played about another 4 hours. In that 4 hours, I think we achieved as much as we had in about the first 7 or 8 hours the first time through. So that's not to say you accelerate and jump through, but we're smarter. We're more agile. We're more informed on how to play the game. And to say that, you know, I wasn't expecting for us to open up the book and start again and to feel that same tingle of, all right, here we go, mofos. I've never played a hard reset, a hard fail game. And I just got to say kudos to the team, because they have made a game that makes hard fail exciting. And I never thought I would say, you know, there was excitement attached to pissing 40 hours down the drain. Now, that's not to say I want to do it again. I think we will play very differently. We will play very aggressively in how we chase our objectives, and equally aggressively in how we chase some of these side quests. But we're going to be equally, on the opposite end of the spectrum, conservative on how we manage this encroaching doom, which is what came as undone in the game. And I think it's a triumph. It's a triumph of game. It's not for everybody, but I think for me, it's a triumph of game. And I look forward to replaying that first 40 hours again, which is a remarkable achievement. And to sum that, what do I prefer? You know, and if you'd asked me Friday, I probably would have said I prefer the Agamonia Tainted Grail model, you know. And to be honest, you could put them on both ends of the scale for me. You've got that fail forward model. And on the other one, I would have probably said I prefer Gloomhaven Frosthaven, because, you know, there's no punishment. But I've got to say, I think I prefer the ATO model, because that punishment, which is those consequences, let's use the word consequences. Those consequences are so motivating now, both to avoid, but more, I'll use the term, to dance with. We are so prepared now to dance with those consequences that it's almost as though we spent the first 40 hours in tutorial mode. And honestly, I've read many, many reviews by gamers who finished Cycle 1 and said the game really starts in Cycle 2. That's when the game starts, when you really know what you're doing. And I can kind of understand that, because we're still finding, I won't say rules errors, but things that we're kind of getting sideways rather than putting them into the keyhole straight on. You know, and I love the fact that I got a partner in crime is going to sit at the table and go, hey man, get those dice. We're starting again, mofo. But with the same zeal and the same passion and the same delight. And I love it. I love it, love it, love it, love it, love it. You know, and I think these sorts of games are going to find it, and this is not related to the chat we just had. This is just sort of, I guess, the fine print in italics at the bottom. They're going to find it harder and harder to get into market, because like Kingdom Death, you know, which is another great big huge beastie, trying to find people who are willing to just say, yeah, I'm going to take that on, and that's going to be 400 hours of my life, is going to get harder and harder because we're getting more and more time poor. I think, you know, one of the things that I've really liked, Into the Unknown, who's the publisher for Aeon Trespass, one of their next big properties is Enormity. And Clappers, you've heard me talk about Enormity off and on for several months. I'm very much looking forward to Enormity. Enormity is Aeon Trespass crossed with Nemesis, and it's going to be fantastic. And I think one of the best things that they've done is they've taken Enormity and they've broken it into 8 mini campaigns. Each campaign's about 40, 45 hours. And you can do them in any order. Now, each of those campaigns layers new lore, layers new available spaces in the huge, huge ship that you're in. You know, the Outer Space Argo, if you're playing ATO. And each of those 8 mini campaigns layers on, though. And, you know, and between them, you've got 400 hours of gameplay that you can initiate. And I think that's clever, because Lands of Evershade, which is another big campaign-esque game that's coming, has done the same thing. Lands of Evershade has a number of, they call them chapters, I think, or adventures. And each one is 40 to 45 hours, which means you can break off little pieces. And you can, if you've only got 2 hours at a time, well, that's still going to take you a year. Or if you're, you know, if you're like Super Trooper 9, you're like, well, let's throw that into day-night Saturdays. That's, you know, 4 or 5 day-night Saturdays and you're done. And you put a line under it and you go, high five. Love it. I love it, guys. Absolutely love it. I love the campaign games. I love the myriad of campaign games that are out there. I'm very much looking forward to throwing Oathsworn on the table. It's on my shelf waiting for a group to play as well. And that's all to say, you know, hit the campaign trail. There's shorter campaigns out there, guys. If you want little campaigns, huzzah. This week's clap, I have spent a week on my back. This week's clap goes to Sudafed. Oh, my sweet baby Jesus, Sudafed. The only thing that kept me upright and breathing. Sudafed is... look, and you have to show your bloody driver's license to buy it in Australia like it's Breaking Bad, right? And so, whatever. But Sudafed, you kept me alive. I can go back to work tomorrow. I can record for my dear clappers. Thank you, OMC crew. Sudafed. I'm sorry. And that concludes this week's therapy session. Thank you, OMC crew, for listening to my offload. It's always great when you get the chance to drop a huge load. Hopefully it was good for you. I'll be traveling for work this week, so smaller solo games. But looking forward to next weekend. More games, more friends, more living. You can reach me on all the socials. Find me on Facebook by searching One Man Clapping. Drop a like or a follow. That'd be great, because once I get to a certain threshold, I can start doing live streams. You can email me at wonmanclapping@gmail.com. I'm on Instagram. And thank you as always for your time. Your time is precious, and the fact that you chose to waste an hour of it listening to how I spend my time is humbling, to say the least. Until next time, get your game on, even if you've got to play with yourself. And remember, if you book an interview with international guests, make sure you know how to work out the time difference. Clocks are your friends. Don't be a Jamez. No one likes a Jamez. Peace out, mofos. Locked in the bunker, shadow shaking. One man clapping secrets awake. Board games living, dice they break. Echoes pounding, hearts they quake.
Peanuts rule.